brother's vest.
Eyes cut by the bullets that killed him. From the great beyond, he will protect you. And the ones you love.
You want me to wear a mask?
The men you seek think you are dead, Kimosabe. Better to stay that way.
All right. But if we ride together, it's to bring these men to justice in a court of law. Is that understood?
Justice is what I seek, Kimosabe.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm Matt Goldberg, the site's managing editor, and with me today are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy, y'all.
And Dave Trumbull.
Hey, guys.
That was very appropriate.
I gotta get started off right.
Exactly. It was a very appropriate howdy, y'all. Not just because Adam lives in Oklahoma, where apparently that's the normal greeting, is howdy. But
that's
we're talking...
It's more Texas than Oklahoma.
It's more Texas, so you're just cribbing from Texas now? Of
yeah,
all the
I mean,
states you could
all
crib
our state
from?
Does, but oh well.
Oh, gosh, that really explains a lot to be the second-rate Texas. Ooh, that's horrible. Let's be Texas without Austin. Let's do that. And now we're just going to rag on Oklahoma for the whole show. Okay, back to the topic at hand, which is Westerns. And I'm so excited to talk about Westerns, even though it will lead us to talking about The Lone Ranger, which is terrible. But Westerns we rarely get to talk about because they don't really make them anymore. They were so dominant in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and then they sort of had to reinvent themselves a little bit in the 60s and 70s, and now they've just kind of tapered off to where there's a few scattered about. But I love the genre. I find it, there's a classic mold to it. It's something with very kind of established rules in the sense of setting and tropes, but from there you can really take it in so many interesting directions. So the genre grounds it, and then you can really fill it in ways that I don't think necessarily other genres that are so... There's no genre I don't think that's quite as specific. There are subgenres that can sort of move into things, like the zombie subgenre, which I think has been beaten to death, but that's for another podcast. There, Western...
Oh, just you wait. I'm going to try to tie it in today, but we'll get to it.
Oh, gosh. Oh, there was something. Wasn't there a Western with zombies in it?
Not the way I want to see it. I mean, this is way off topic, but the zombie tropes have been, like you said, no pun intended, but done to death. I feel like if you go back in time to before anybody really knew about them to a Western, that could be interesting, but that's a way side topic.
Right. And we should come to it sometime, but Westerns are a lot of fun, and I like the sort of the tight, tense Westerns, but also like the sprawling epic Westerns. Like one of my favorite films of all time is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Mm-hmm. But Leone has like Once Upon a Time in the West, also a fantastic film. Fistful of Dollars, also good. For a Few Dollars More, also good. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker is a little... that's a little strange one, but it's still got its charms. But, I mean, that's just Leone. Then you have, you know, John West. No, that's missing a word. John Ford and just so many great Westerns that just sort of are out and about. So now that I've raved about them, what are y'all's thoughts on the Western? How do you feel about the genre?
I just love the genre in a sense because it's wholly American. I mean, it is the Wild West of America. I don't know if there's any other genre that can really say that. You know, we have talked about, you know, what makes an American film in the past. And we talked about crime dramas and sort of the mafia type things, but those have an international scale to it. They have international ties where they can just be told in a variety of settings. I mean, there's not really any other place you can tell a Western. Even if you film it in Italy, that's fine. But it's an American story. And unfortunately, we're getting further and further away from that time period, and people are sort of starting to forget it. And I think maybe that's why that tie to that sort of classic Wild West movie or TV show isn't quite as strong as it used to be. And it's unfortunate. And then we have things like The Lone Ranger come along and do nothing for that cause whatsoever.
Adam, what about you?
I like it quite a bit. I was kind of a latecomer to the Western genre, which mm-hmm. Coming from Oklahoma is not a good thing to do. But I like it. The thing I like most about the Western genre is it again, like Dave said, it's something that it provides a unique opportunity in that it's this setting that bad guys and good guys can both take place in, but bad guys can get away with doing really bad things and living around for a long time. Like, there's no, like, oh, you know, like the FBI is going to come in, like, you know, this is going to get taken care of, this is going to get handled. It's very much like a, you know, the law of the land is handled by, you have to have really good men out there who are, you know, the sheriffs and stuff, and they have to take, you know, like really strong actions in order to do good things and make good things happen and put these bad guys to a stop. And sometimes the bad guys don't get stopped. So, you know, I like that aspect of it, and I just love the landscape. Like, the Western genre provides some of, like, the most gorgeous visuals. Mm-hmm. I mean, say what you will about The Lone Ranger. I feel like it was gorgeously shot, but everything else was really bad. But just the landscapes and the kind of laziness and the sprawliness. I have to be in the right mood to watch a Western because it's kind of mm-hmm. one of those where you kind of just sit back and, you know, it's going to be kind of a long, but you can just kind of let it envelop you and you just kind of live in this world for a while.
Dude, it's such like a macho genre too, because I mean, it was basically just like more or less black and white. Like, there were literally black hats and white hats. So you knew, even watching a black and white movie or TV show, good guys versus bad guys, but you had these just like paragons of just virtue versus sort of the greed. You had these standards to look up to for, you know, sort of these strong male heroes. I don't know how much of the women's lib really ever got into the Westerns, but most of the time you only really see them in the whorehouses, unfortunately. But
the whorehouses or the farm. They're like
the one lone woman with her child on the farm. Yeah, that's it. That's the only two roles you ever see. Yeah.
But I also think that speaking of it as an American tale, that the reason it's also sort of enduring is that it reflects the current mood of America. So you have sort of these rousing 30s, 40s Westerns, and they could still be subversive, sort of like Stagecoach is very old-fashioned, but at the same time, it's sort of that encroaching modernity where John mm-hmm. Wayne's character is slowly being pushed out, and then he gets pushed out even further with the Searchers. It's that kind of notion, but we were just talking about, you know, who the good guys are and the bad guys are, but even that begins to fall apart. You look at High Noon, and there's Gary Cooper. He's the sheriff. He's the good guy, and the whole town's rallying behind him, and then the bad guys come, and they're like, bye, Gary Cooper. Like, they haven't. They're no longer there. Everyone just leaves, and he's like, what the hell? And that film unfolds in real time, which is just a cool little other mm-hmm. facet about it. But it really is sort of this, I have to ride off into the sunset, not as glory, not just as a moment of glory, but to get away from these assholes. That's why I'm leaving. So it's that kind of changing the tone of it and finding new things to say, but always through that lens. So we, again, it has something to ground us, and then from there we can really take it in interesting ways. But I would also like to say, though, we're gonna talk Lone Ranger. Oh my goodness, but you're talking about this big sprawling mess, and it kind of ruins it. But then again, we saw Adam. We saw Sweetwater. Was it Stillwater?
God, yes.
Stillwater.
Sweetwater.
Oh, okay, yeah. At Sundance, and it was ostensibly a Western, and it was wholly terrible. Oh my God!
Oh, it's awful. It was like the Boondock Saints transported to the West.
That is a perfect way of saying.
See,
it.
See, now I know that you two don't like that, but to me, I'd be like, "Fuck yeah!" So,
but it's like done. But it's done really badly. It's by like guys who don't know how to make a movie. And January Jones is the lead,
So Boondock Saints 2,
it really is. And when we say Boondock Saints, it's the notion of it's cool for the sake of being cool, except I think there are people who watch the Boondock Saints and actually find it cool. I think if they were to watch Sweetwater, they would be bored to tears at how hard it's trying and how lame it comes off. So that's not to say, and to me that's so frustrating because the Westerns are rare now, and so I just like glom onto them to the point where I'm like, I'll even like accept sort of an okay Western like Appaloosa, where it's like, hey, it's Ed Harris and Viggo Mortensen in a Western doing their thing. Okay. It's
like, or even just like the TV shows. I mean, there used to be a ton of TV shows on. I mean, now we've got what? Hell on Wheels is kind of the closest thing we've got to a
poor
Western.
Man,
I know they
poor
were,
man's Deadwood.
Yeah, exactly. And I know they've been going through some production troubles and stuff lately. But yeah, Deadwood was on for, I don't know, what was it? A couple of years?
3 years.
Yeah, and that was out.
And
I mean, there's
I wish that had continued.
Yeah.
It was so good. It just kept getting better and better. And then
I mean, what a world to live in Deadwood, man. I mean, that thing, you were transported there.
Absolutely. And just amazing performances. Yeah. To me, that made me a lifelong fan of Garrett Dillahunt, because they recast him in a completely different role, and I had no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how good he is.
Well, it's an interesting genre, too, because it was so popular. Like, it was the movie, like, when in, you know, kind of like 30s, 40s, and 50s, it was like, what picture are you going to go out to see? You going to see a musical or a Western? So, you know, like, you and those were like the
before taking
ones.
In a vaudeville show.
Yeah. And nowadays it's so hard to get people to see a Western. They just don't make money. And I'm kind of amazed that Hell on Wheels is still on AMC. I think I think AMC is staring down the barrel with Breaking Bad and Mad Men ending, and they don't know what the hell to do, so they're just kind of keeping stuff on. But
it's a show that's around for dearth of programming. AMC had stronger hitters, that show would probably be dust.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, Lone Ranger bombed at the box office with Johnny Depp in it as well. And
well, just
I mean,
look a few years ago, Cowboys and Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
That
right,
fucking
well.
Tank. But look, I know.
Maybe,
and, right,
maybe make a good one. And maybe
make a good Western. That's the problem. Like, they're taking these blockbuster premises and they're putting them in a Western genre, and the movies are just bad. And we were talking about this last week where it's like a female-led superhero movies. It's not inherently bad. You're just making bad movies.
Right.
The concept is sound. You're just ruining it.
Stop ruining things.
It is. Well, Adam, what you were saying, I mean, part of the reasons that they made so many Westerns is they were so cheap to make.
Right.
And you could just... It's
you just
California.
Reuse all the sets.
And that was one of the reasons John Ford found it so appealing, because he could leave the studio, edit in the camera, and just be on his own. It was independence for him. And even aside from his films, it was just cheap to make. The scenery is there. You have cheap sets. The costumes are all there. And the plots can be fairly simple.
Yep.
There is a Western channel. I didn't know. There is a Western channel.
Oh, I'm aware.
The only reason I know this is because Michael Jordan watches it. I was reading a profile on Michael Jordan. He loves Westerns. So, hey, if Michael Jordan likes it, well, he's an asshole, but still, Westerns are appealing today, and there's a channel to them, but it doesn't matter. It's just like one of those niche channels, and it's so frustrating that I don't want to say the Western is dead. Like, there will always, to me, it's not like there will never be another Western. They'll keep making Westerns, but again, it's rare, and it's frustrating to see that when we're getting such a glut of other kinds of movies. And I guess the question I have for you guys is, if there was a successful Western film, if we got like another Unforgiven, something that just was a huge success, and because studios are always trying to emulate huge success, do you think there could ever be a Western boom again?
I mean, I hope there is. I hope this is one of those things that's just a cycle. It just happens to be a much broader cycle than some of the other things we see. But I don't know. It's tough to match a Western, I think, with the tone of what we have today. It's weird because people want to adapt comics and superhero properties, these sort of more fantastical properties, and make them gritty and realistic, which we always say. Yet you have stories that are, they're inherently gritty and realistic because they happened and there was actual grit, you know, like actual physical grit. True grit. Yeah, nothing really happened after that. I mean, we'll get to recommendations later, but I mean, to talk about 310 to Yuma, which was only back in 2007, it took 50 years for a remake of that movie. And I thought they did a fantastic job with it, but nothing spun off of that. It was 310 to Yuma, True Grit. I can't even think of anything else that was like a true Western.
True Grit was a hit as well. I mean, that was a hit movie, but I think that was so singularly Coen Brothers. Like, people look at that and it's like, that's their movie. No one can do what they do.
And no one has really made a franchisable Western yet either. I think that's another issue in this studio era that we're in. You need a franchise for anything like this to kind of continue. And if they tried it with Lone Ranger, I mean, I think they went complete wrong direction with that, but That was an opportunity missed.
Well, Lone Ranger is just ashamed of being called Lone Ranger, which is so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's
insulting, too.
To the point
it really
where,
is.
And the strange thing was, is they were fighting to make this movie.
Right.
They took pay cuts. For those who don't know, this movie almost didn't get made, and in retrospect, probably shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But the issue was, the budget was $250 million, at which point we all scratched our heads and go, why does a Lone Ranger movie need to cost $250 million? And Disney, some sane person at Disney, probably had the same question. And so Gore Verbinski, director Gore Verbinski, producer Jerry Bruckheimer, and producer star Johnny Depp, I think he's also producer on the film.
I think so,
probably
yeah.
Is. They were all like, we can get down the budget to $215 million. At which point, everyone wondered, why does a Lone Ranger movie need to cost $215 million? And so they were like, we'll take points on the back end, we'll cut our salaries down, we'll rearrange things, and we'll cut a few things from the script. Who knows what was cut? What if the movie had made sense? It still wouldn't matter. It would have been even longer, my goodness. And so we'll cut some things, and that'll get the price down. The grand irony here is it still ended up costing $250 million due to production delays caused to dust storms. Johnny Depp broke his leg. Someone died. And those things slowed down production a bit. And so it ended up costing $250 million anyway. So all this money goes into this thing where they're hoping it's a franchise. I mean, that's the investment. And I think maybe other studios couldn't weather this as easily as Disney. I mean, they're going to take a hit, but they can take that hit because they have – it's like we have Pixar. We have Marvel. We have Lucasfilm. We can afford the John Carters and the Lone Rangers of this world.
Which both, unfortunately, have a pseudo-Western tie to them, so I don't think they're going to be making a Western anytime in the near future, which is good.
I think that ties into your question of if a Western was a hit, if there could be another Western boom. I think the problem is, and we've talked about this before, that studios now are only making movies that cost like $10 or $20 million or $150 to $200 million. Dollars. And when you try to make a Western for $250 million, it's not a Western anymore. Like, it becomes ridiculous. And so I think the problem there is, like, how do they – first of all, it's really hard to make a hit Western, so studios don't want to invest a ton of money into a Western when – they look at the numbers and say Westerns don't work, especially now that the Lone Ranger bombed. They're going to say, oh, you know, they had Johnny Depp and it bombed, so we're not making a Western.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, besides that, like, I mean, I feel like the studio's mandate would be like, okay, we're going to make a Western, but we need to do it big because we're competing with, you know, Iron Man and Superman and all these other – it has to be a tentpole, which I think is the wrong way of thinking about it in the wrong direction. I would have loved this Lone Ranger. The shades of it when it was a true Western were really good, but when they tried to make it a comedy like a Pirates of the Caribbean was when it faltered and just became ridiculous. So I feel like if you can give someone enough money, like $50-80 million to go and make a true Western, like a traditional Western, maybe we would get a good one. But I don't see a studio that's going to be willing to do that because, I mean, you look at the history of the genre, like Matt said, like True Grit was a hit, but I think everyone just considers that like, oh, it was Coen Brothers and
and the same thing with Django. I mean, that's Tarantino.
Yeah, right? And I had completely forgot. I was trying to think of modern Westerns. I don't even really consider that a Western. I consider that like a Tarantino movie. Like his
exactly.
Movies,
it's his mashup of whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, you can't really fit that into the genre. But, you know, I don't know. I think I think the best shot for a true Western would be back on TV. And I think with the expanding cable landscape, you know, they're doing the – like right now we're seeing a boom of serial killer-driven drama series that are like – you know, they take the aspects of the procedurals on like CBS and stuff that people love, but then they stretch it out and add like – deeply layered characters, which The Killing was horrible in seasons 1 and 2, but it's really good this season for season 3. And there's a new series on FX called The Bridge, which is about a border town and I think a Mexican cop and a Texas cop who are teaming up to find a serial killer too. But you know, these shows are delving more into character, and I feel like once that serial killer genre or whatever thing kind of starts getting played out, I would hope that people would start looking in the direction of the Western.
See, I think if the Western comes along, it's going to be something that's independently financed and comes along in a festival scene, probably...
Sweetwater.
Exactly. No, see, that's the issue. You have something like that. But you have something with a little... You get a good cast, and you sort of maybe burst into the festival scene a bit. So maybe, like, although Lord knows how this movie will turn out, and I'm fascinated to see, but Jane got her gun. Like, what is that movie going to look like? Because it has stars. It lost a director 3 days, or the day of production. Yeah. And
they've shuffled cast around.
They've shuffled directors around. They've done everything. And so, again, I'm curious to see what that movie looks like. But assuming it were a hit, and assuming it was really good, and assuming it came out at TIFF, and it got some buzz going for it, and it's like, hey, we can have Westerns in sort of a serious mold. Because I think if you want them as action movies again, that's where it gets difficult, because it seems like a Western with set pieces is going to be much, much harder to find. I mean, there can be a shootout, but something really... Something on a character level, but also something with... You can have an impressive set piece in a Western. I think Lone Ranger goes completely fucking overboard. To where it's just ridiculous, but you can have something that would, but it would cost a little more money, and that's the thing. It would be if you wanted to even push it more towards the action side, festivals sort of, I don't want to say they cringe at that or they recoil, but it's harder for them to go into that.
To Adam's point, the True Grit remake, just for numbers, the True Grit remake was $40 million budget, at least reported budget, and they netted about $250 million in their box office. And then the 310 to Yuma budget was about $50-55 million, and they didn't do quite as well. They only brought in about 70. But to Adam's point, I mean, nobody's really doing that anymore. Those are two movies in the past 6-7 years that have a mid-range budget, and they were successful. But there's not a line of Westerns waiting to be made now. Oh, and also another point, you guys keep saying Sweetwater. I think they've changed the title to Sweet Vengeance. So any listeners out there that really are interested in this movie, look for Sweet Vengeance.
No, don't.
It doesn't have distribution yet. I don't know if it'll ever come out.
I saw an international poster for it on ImpAwards. So let it come out over there.
When you were talking about doing like the Westerns, the straight drama, it brought to mind this movie John Sayles did in 1996 called Lone Star, which is like a melding of like mystery and Western, which I think is another like interesting way to go. I don't know if either of you have seen, but
I saw it a while ago. But
I think to go the more dramatic route, because I mean True Grit, I mean, is a Coen Brothers movie. 310 to Yuma could be more action geared if you wanted to say it, but I feel like that has strong characters too, but it also has set pieces. But I would like to see a strong like mid-level drama like what Matt's talking about.
I really think the saving grace for them is going to be, it's got to be TV. I mean, there's so many different angles you could take on these stories.
Justified,
it doesn't have to be the same old tropes over
Justified
again.
Justified is kind of a Western. It's a modern day Western.
Oh yeah.
So they're sort
you can
of
do
really,
modern modernize it.
Yeah, exactly. You can take the heart of it, even if you're not taking the time and the place. So there is that aspect to it. But honestly, I think if it moves to television, it's simply because everything is moving to television. Adam, just to your point about the serial killers, True Detective, about it's Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey on the track of a 17 serial killer who's been at large for 17 years. People love them serial killers. And
what if that's a Western too? Because it takes place in it's like Alabama or like Texas.
I thought it
or something.
Takes place in Louisiana.
Oh yeah, you're right. I don't know. For some reason, I had it in my head that it was kind of a Western from maybe just that one image of.
Maybe it will have that tone. We don't really know much about it and how it will play, but it feels like, at the very least, the Western is something that people aren't disgusted with or they aren't against it. It's just they don't know how to utilize it correctly. I don't think there's anyone out there who's vehemently anti-Western.
I think people are just disconnected.
I think there's a lot of people who I know plenty of people who say they don't like Westerns and ask why and they think they're boring. So I think that's the problem that studios see is that like how do we make a Western exciting? Because I don't imagine I know a lot of people that don't really want to sit down and watch a Western where it's basically a bunch of people talking, which I mean like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is not action centered or really like goal oriented. It's more about characters.
True, but
I think when people hear Western they think like the classics that Matt was talking about earlier, the sort of the mid 20th century classic Westerns with your John Ford directing, your John Wayne starring, you know, before you even get to like a Clint Eastwood era. I think that's what they think of. And they'll see him, like, maybe replaying on, like, TNT or AMC, like, a Saturday afternoon, and people just kind of pass them over. But I think there's definitely room for a more modern approach to them, and they don't necessarily have to be, quote-unquote, boring. I just think that's an old-fashioned kind of view of them. But it's because we haven't had anything to really change that perspective in the last 10 years.
Right, so... And the problem is that we keep kind of killing... I mean, you do need that sort of action-oriented Western, and it keeps... We've had sort of two shots at it. I mean, I know Cowboys and Aliens is that sci-fi
right.
Western melding, but it's still that, like, he could have taken the and Aliens and put it to anywhere, you know? Knights and Aliens, whatever, doesn't matter. That's the hook, and Aliens is the hook.
Like Black Knight, was that the one with Martin Lawrence?
Yeah, Black Knight, Martin Lawrence, time-traveling Martin Lawrence, yeah.
Well, that's just a Yankee in King Arthur's court, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's Twain. But, again, it's at least a Western anything, and it's going so horribly. And you look at Lone Ranger, and it's so cynical in a way. You look at it, and again, the film is just a shame to be Lone Ranger, so why even make
it? That.
But, again, it's something where it was a show that was very small scale, but popular and charming. And why couldn't you make that movie for... $50 million. Why couldn't you just say, I mean, how much did Green Hornet cost? Because Green Hornet actually is...
You know what? When I was watching Lone Ranger, I was like, this is kind of like Green Hornet in spirit. It basically was when it came down to it. I mean, just the overblown budget, the goofy, incompetent main hero with his minority sidekick. I mean, there were shades of Green Hornet to this whole thing, which is not a compliment to either movie.
No. And it's kind of sneering all along the way.
Yeah.
There's very little... joy in it, and again,
exactly.
Both film and yet both films had to fight to get made. I mean, Green Hornet was in production, was in development hell forever, and then Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg come along, and they scrapped to get that film made. I mean, they had Stephen Chow on board to co-star and direct, and then he dropped out, and it was like the project is dead, and they're like, no, it's not dead, and so they brought on Michelle Gondry, who they had to convince the studio that he's not. I think the quote was that he wasn't going to make the entire movie out of cardboard, like it's that kind of. He can be a real director. And then Seth Rogen, to be fair, they found out that the studio meddling really got in the way of the movie
Absolutely. They
were trying to make. So it's not all on them. Whereas Lone Ranger, you get the sense that the studio didn't meddle. This was just Gore Verbinski and Johnny Depp run amok. And
well, I still remember that when this movie was first announced, there was nothing. It was Disney had a stage and Jerry Bruckheimer and Johnny Depp and the title The Lone Ranger. They had no script. They had no director. They were just like, we're going to make Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp as Tonto. Like, that was it. And then they're like, someone figure out how to do this. Like, someone make it.
And what's so weird like about this...
That was their direction. Somebody make it.
Yeah, and so – and then they just sort of... Round?
He just sort of did.
He just sort of did without any idea or any really measure of would anyone go to see this. And it makes me wonder, was this something that – who wanted it? Was it Depp or was it Bruckheimer or was it both? Because Depp, his fingerprints are all over Lone Ranger in a way that he clearly had influence in Pirates of the Caribbean. And I mean, he did. And part of what made that film kind of work is because they made it. They made the first one and – Verbinski and Depp kind of had a pirate attitude to it. It's like, we're just going to go crazy with this, and stupid Michael Eisner can't do anything to stop us because we're at sea. And they get these, I'm sure Michael Eisner was just watching this and just abject horror as you have Keith Richards, you know, prancing about as this pirate and not knowing what to make of it. And I...
Oh, well, in Disney War, it says that Eisner, during a screening, said that Depp was fucking ruining his movie.
Exactly.
Like, when he was watching dailies, Eisner was pissed.
I know, and that continued his streak about being wrong about a lot of things. As in his later career, in the 90s, he was pretty spot on. But as time progressed, he really missed the mark. And Pirates was a surprise hit, and I think. That's the thing we keep hoping for. We keep hoping we're chasing Pirates of the Caribbean, this completely unexpected, something that looks like it'll be fucking terrible. It's like, who's gonna... They're adapting a theme park ride? That's stupid. And it turned out to be really fun. And it's...
a rarity, and we keep hoping. It's like Battleship. We thought pirates would be stupid. Maybe Battleship won't be stupid, and it's. I think it's stupid. I know that you guys feel.
Oh no, it's definitely stupid. It's just fun stupid.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But again, it's that every time we look at a property, it's like really they're making that in the movie. At least in the back of my mind, it's like, well, pirates. but it's turning out more and more to be the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah.
And so here it looked like, again, everything about Lone Ranger screams, let's do another Pirates. We'll do Pirates in the West without understanding about all the freedom Pirates of the Caribbean has. Because Pirates of the Caribbean doesn't really even have a story or mythos to draw from. At most, all you have to do is reference the ride. That's all you have to do. And then you're free to go nuts. And then it's like, we're going to be at sea and we're going to have, you know, battles and crazy creatures and all this fun stuff that kind of works. And then Lone Ranger, they're sort of strapped into a setting that doesn't necessarily offer a lot in terms of what you can do set piece wise, which is why.
See, I don't know. I kind of disagree with that though, because I don't know anything about the Lone Ranger except it's the Lone Ranger and Tonto, and Lone Ranger is basically a white hat with a white horse, and that's all I know. That's really all I know. So yeah, to me, here. they could have just done. They had like carte blanche to do whatever they wanted to do. If they wanted to make a 90-minute tight little,
well, and that's what I'm
action,
saying. I think that would have worked better. But at the budget that Gore Verbinski wanted it, how much can you really do? I mean, we were talking. I think it was rumored. I don't know if this ever proved out to be true. But at one point, there were like werewolves in the story, and I think
There was something about it, like a native. There was some sort of native. Like supernatural.
Well, I was talking with my friend afterwards, and she pointed out that the whole cannibalistic rabbits that are in the movie, that's Wendigo. That's nature out of bounds. But because they never explain really what Wendigo is, and that it's something,
and they drop it like
exactly. So clearly, that's something that was a relic of a previous script, or something that just was left there, and it was maybe explained. So maybe the werewolves, as crazy as that is, was part of that idea, but it was dropped aside. So even then, you have to bring in a supernatural element, a sci-fi element, horror element, to embellish what the Western can be at its base level. Because at its base level, at the scale Gore Verbinski wanted, it seemed like trains. That's the biggest thing I have in this world.
He did love trains.
He did love trains, because both set, they're two major set pieces, and they both involve trains.
And they're built from scratch, too.
The whole thing smells of, like, let's do pirates again. You've got a genre that hasn't worked in years and everyone considers dead, which was the pirate genre. This is the Western genre. You get Gore Verbinski and Johnny Depp. You throw in a supernatural element, which was, you know, thrown by the wayside. You have big action set pieces using these relics from the past, using trains instead of boats. Like it really feels like Disney was just like, you know, you had the bad guy, and then you had the bad guy's quirky like sidekicks who were kind of like weird, who were the, I don't remember the names of the two guys from the Pirates trilogy, but you know, the guy with the eyeball that kept popping out.
They were at least somewhat better defined. They had chemistry and lines, and I don't remember.
No, I'm just saying that it feels like it's copied.
Oh no, I agree. You know, you have sort of like the uptight tech, like the hero who's kind of technically the lead, but he's kind of just more uptight, and he has a romance subplot, but really Johnny Depp's character is sort of the man alone scene stealer, which in this one, it's really uncomfortable red face, minstrel show kind of thing.
It was like offensive. I found it offensive. Like after I watched it the first time, I was like, well, that was a bad movie, but I didn't hate it. But the more I thought about it, when you're showing like the slaughter of these Native American peoples and intercutting that sequence with Tonto cracking jokes by like running down a cave, like this was a disaster of tone for me. Like the tone was
way off.
There was no reason for all these jokes. Like that was a horrible sequence to watch all those Native Americans get slaughtered, and Tonto just kind of like brushes it off, and they're just, you know, like cracking one-liners while they're like running down a mineshaft. Like I was genuinely, and I don't get offended by movies very often, but I thought that was way off base.
And like one of the major sequences at the end where they have, I think it's the 1812 overture, the William Tell, which is like the Lone Ranger kind of like theme. That's what everybody kind of knew. And of course they had to shoehorn it in somewhere. But my God, watching that last sequence where like bad guy who's revealed to be yet another bad guy. It's pretty obvious from the beginning. He, like, backhands Ruth Wilson. He, like, punches a kid in the face. And meanwhile, they have, like, the Lone Ranger theme. Like, just gallivanting over the top of this. Like, it's supposed to be some, like, uproarious heroic moment. And there's, like, women being flung from trains and backhanded. And just natives getting shredded by, like, automatic weapons. It's just a complete mess.
The woman being
and that just speaks for the whole...
The woman being hit, uncomfortable. Being flung from trains, I was kind of okay with. Because I'm like, oh, that's Back to the Future Part 3. That's fun. That's fine. But then, see, but that's the whole thing. Even within that scene, it's like fun, uncomfortable. Like, it's just a total
They don't
mess.
Let themselves have fun either. Yeah, even when they do try to make sort of the nods back to the Lone Ranger, then they step on it. I mean, there's a scene towards the end. I think it's like the last scene, except for the painful credit scene, which I sat there and watched mesmerized. We can talk about the framing device at some point, too, because what a fucking mess that is. There's a scene where he does, you know, Army Hammer, which is, I think, the first time we mention his name. He does the, you know, Hi-Oh, Silver, and then, like, they cut to Johnny Depp, and he's like, never do that again. It's like, what?
And to me, that's great advice to Disney and Gore Verbinski and Johnny Depp. Never do that again. But no, you're right. It's just like, we hate the Lone Ranger. We have to make it cool and edgy and weird, and it's just like...
You didn't. Like, when it was straight Western, it was genuinely good. Like, the beginning of the movie started off really earnest, and I really like... I mean, save for the framing device, which was awful. But, like, when... Like, before Tonto comes in, it's... Like, Army Hammer is good with what he's given. And when Gore Verbinski is making a Western, he's making a Western. We've seen from Rango, which is incredible, that he knows how to do that. But it's when you throw in Johnny Depp doing his wacky, goofy sidekick thing, trying to recopy his Pirates thing, that it's just, like... It does not work. It does not fit in, and it ruins every, like, earnest thing that Verbinski tries to do.
Are we kind of...
And then you run it for 2.5 hours. It's like, good Lord. Like, do you really need to? It could have, fallen between 90 minutes and 2 hours. Yeah. Easily.
And can I, just as a quick aside, are we kind of done with Johnny Depp at this point? Or are we...
I mean, it seems like audiences are.
It seems, well... Nate, I mean, between that and Dark Shadows, and I tweeted this earlier today, maybe stop making adaptations of properties that are over 40 years old. Maybe that's
Be back in, what, the next Alice in Wonderland, right?
Well, no, next up is Transcendence. So that could be...
But I mean, as far as, like, the big budget kind of, like, his character. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. So, and see, and that's the whole thing. You had that Alice in Wonderland that was sort of this weird jolt, where it was something like, no, look, people can't accept him outside of Jack Sparrow. Look, and then it's like, let's give him leeway to do other dumb things. And like the whole, like, bird on his head, that is straight up Depp. That was him. He's like, I saw this painting of this whatever and I want that. And so, and he's like, and now I'm going to feed the dead bird on my head. For no, and it's just distracting and
just make bird-related comments the entire movie. Did not laugh once. I don't think anybody in the theater laughed once at any of the bird jokes. Like, how did that get tested?
Oh, I'm in Oklahoma, but they were fucking loving all of the Tonto jokes.
Oh,
so
really?
Funny. And the final thing with the, like, never do that again. Whole theater just, oh my gosh, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, cracking up.
But how did they react to, and sorry, spoiler alert for the end credits, how did they react to the sad Tonto walking into the distance? What the fuck was that?
From his day job at the carnival in San Francisco.
By the way, did you notice that his little thing underneath his cage with no glass or whatever says the noble savage, just to really lay in there how offensive this is to Native Americans, and just doesn't get it. And what was even worse is they were clearly aware that this could be seen as offensive, but Depp's like, no, I'm 1/16 whatever. Because everyone is, at this point, we're all 1/16 Native American. That's the lamest excuse for anyone who wants to, no, I am Native American. No, you're not. At 1/16, no, you're not. And then they found a tribe. They found a Native American tribe. And I'm not sure if it was Comanche like it is in this film, but it was a tribe. And they're like, yes, we will accept Johnny Depp into our tribe. And
it was here in Oklahoma.
It was. And this sort of, and it was a stamp of Native American approval.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As if that absolved this film of all of its myriad of racist sins. God, how did this happen?
I really don't know. You can't point to, like, my favorite moments in this movie were Army Hammer holding a kitten for half a second, Ruth Wilson trying her damnedest, I think, to make something of this movie, and the horse.
Her damsel in distress.
Yeah, and then they tried to give her like some heroic moments, and then they backhanded her off a train onto a horse's ass. So that
it
didn't
felt
really
like matter. It felt like a lot of her scenes were probably cut because Gore was like, "I already have 3 hours, but I want to keep more trains, so
more
do away
train.
With the woman."
More Helena Bonham
Carter. You have, and then you have Barry Pepper in there for no reason.
I love Barry Pepper though, so whatever.
I love Barry Pepper too, but I mean, here's a third villain who we don't need. You didn't need
no
two
sense
you,
either.
Honest,
they're like,
I think if you just
feel bad about killing all the natives. Now I'm just going to kill this child and his mother.
Right.
Like, what happened, Barry Pepper? Why are you so angry?
Well, I'm clearly based off Custer, and therefore
yeah.
I must be the worst human being ever.
Yep. Might as well just go whole hog.
Exactly. There's no half measures for Custer.
I thought William Fichtner did a great job.
Yeah.
With, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, there are shades of a good movie in here. Like, Army Hammer is solid, and I really wish someone would use him the way he needs to be used, because I think he is a terrific actor. And I mean, he does that earnest, like, and I know, for, like, there are so many shades of Man Who Shot Liberty Valance in this, but he's very much that Jimmy Stewart, you know, book smart character. But it's just, that's what was so frustrating about it, was that I thought it started off so strong, and James mm-hmm. Badge Dale and like his small role, but God, I don't know what happened. I don't know how this disaster came together.
See, I think if you pared it down, I think if you really pared it down and said,
yeah. Cut the budget by 100, 150
If you
million.
Cut it down and you're like, this is Lone Ranger, and we will endure the origin story, even though, as Devin on Badass pointed out, that a lot of these origin stories are growing really tired, and maybe it's okay to have a hero come to us who's just fully formed, and that's yep. not the worst thing in the world. But you have Lone Ranger and Tonto going after Butch Cavendish. Would that be
Done.
The worst movie ever? Like, is that so hard, just to have these two guys fighting off against a bad guy? Like, that's their whole movie. And
take that supernatural, like, Wendigo bullshit out of it. Get rid of all that.
And the ridiculously dark, like, I'm going to eat his heart now. Like,
yeah, yeah, which he stabbed him in the stomach, too. So, I mean, at least do your basic medical research, please, before you do. I mean, that's the
small I think he disemboweled him.
James Badge Dale keeps his heart in his tummy.
If you've made it this far and you haven't seen it yet, I'm sorry that we spoiled the whole movie. We'll probably put a
no,
spoiler
alert. No, we're doing them a service.
No, I don't care. I don't care. I'm sorry, listener, if you're just steaming that it's like, you spoiled the Lone Ranger for me. You know what? The Lone Ranger spoils itself by being a terrible fucking movie. If I wanted to protect you, you know that. If we wanted to protect you, you know that we would. We care about you, and we're caring about you. We've been saying since the beginning of this podcast how bad this fucking movie is. So did you think that we were going to be like, don't listen anymore to what is going on? It's a bad fucking movie, and it's just something where, does anyone learn their lesson? Does anyone...
No, because Depp does Pirates 5, and it makes $1 billion, and he's back to being on top
right
of the world.
Right back up.
So.
But see, and that, but that's so... Do studios not seem to get this, where it's like, we're not showing up for Johnny Depp, we're showing up for Jack Sparrow. That's who we're showing up at for. It's the actors aren't carrying it anymore. We're not... The star system is pretty much dead. What we want are the characters, the franchises. That's what we're showing up to. People
right.
aren't showing up because, boy, do I love that Johnny Depp. They're like, boy, that Jack Sparrow sure makes me laugh, even though On Stranger Tides is fucking abysmal.
Oh, it's so awful.
Yeah.
But this year, Will Smith and Johnny Depp both bombed, and Melissa yep. McCarthy opened a movie. So... I mean, how did they not get it?
And that... Melissa McCarthy doing an original role, so just
yeah.
doing that, exactly. And so it does go to that, what William Goldman said, nobody knows anything, but we can start yep. to know something.
Well,
and
these
I think
guys are always going to be behind the trends, though, too. I mean, you got to remember, they started production on Lone Ranger, what, how many years ago now? At least 2 years ago, probably, because of all the holdups.
Starts and stops. Yeah, I think it was first announced in like 2007, and then Depp joined in 2008, but they didn't start like production until 2011, I believe.
So, I mean, at that point, it's difficult to like pinpoint the moment that people stopped caring, because at that point, people probably still did. It's just a case of them being kind of behind the trends.
Right.
This was a whole mess just for a myriad of reasons.
But you did remind me about something sort of action-oriented that can still work, and that's, it's not a Western, but it's a period piece, and when I was watching Lone Ranger, it's like, this is a crappy Mask of Zorro, because it is sort of that, it's that masked Avenger, and he's going after sort of, there's sort of two villains. There's the sort of the down-to-earth villain with a personal vendetta, and then there's the rich guy who's sort of overarching, and then the
partner. Yeah, pulling the strings.
Exactly, yeah. And so there is sort of that classic mold to it. I like, and I guess part of the comparison came from, is that Ted Elliott, and is it Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio? Am I getting their name right?
The writers. Yeah.
They're the writers on both. Now, granted, for blockbuster films, screenplays pass through a billion people, but Elliott and Rossio also wrote the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I like those guys. I think they come up with fun banter and fun stories, but I think I would also account for, I think Depp is this steamroller who comes in with these awful ideas and they have to accommodate him, and Verbinski's at this point where he's just going to go wild as well, and at some point the excess is too much to handle. And I think you even saw that. I mean, I still enjoy the film, but I think a lot of people were just completely put off by Pirates by the time At World's End came along, because that's just so excessive in everything it's doing. I mean, at that point Jack Sparrow he's a superhero at that point. He can leap and jump and do whatever. He's just indestructible. So
yeah, that was an exhausting movie.
It is. I still enjoy it. But to me, it's like, I had fun with it. And Lone Ranger is exhausting without the fun.
Well, I think the animated format is perfectly suited to Verbinski, because I love Rango.
Oh,
Rango is one
fantastic.
Of my favorite movies of 2011. And that was like the perfect blend of like his weird sensibilities. He got those weird moments in, but they weren't. So it didn't feel bloated and didn't feel over the top. It felt very reined in and goal-oriented. Even when, you know, Rango goes off in the desert and meets Clint Eastwood, it still feels like it's part of the story, even though this is something that's completely crazy that's happening.
And I feel like he kind of has to, because he's working, obviously, with the animation. You know, that's the big chunk of that budget is in the animation department. So you can't just go crazy and have like a 2.5 hour movie.
And come up with shit on the fly. Like, you just can't like, wouldn't it, in the middle of production, just being like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if X? And
Nope, sorry. We've already got the storyboard.
Exactly. Nope, sorry. It's going to cost way too much money. And if we're going to spend a lot of money, it's going to be on a fucking Lone Ranger movie. So, Westerns. It always it's a pain that's coming.
I wouldn't mind watching it again just to count how many, like, racist moments there are in the entire movie.
Just a little.
They try to put as many in as they can.
Just
they
a little really racist counter in the bottom left-hand corner. It's like, ding, it's racist, ding, racist.
Well, and for much as this was billed as, like, Tonto's story, why was the, like, main goal of the film not Tonto's, like, revenge or seeking revenge for people, for the, you know, like the massacre of his people? Why was it about silver and white people?
Broken pocket watch.
Yeah. Like, if it's supposed to be about that, make it about that. That's another thing that I found offensive, is that if it's like, they just kind of like brushed off like all of these Indians were killed. The bigger issue was, you know, the villains are stealing silver. So, you know,
that's another thing. In Mask of Zorro, they're stealing gold. So there's another comparison.
Yeah.
It's all about the precious ore of wherever. Doesn't matter. But no, actually, it's that you bring up, I was talking with the same friend that I saw the film with, and she mentioned the point that wouldn't it have just been better if Tonto was a white guy who sort of took on the persona of a Native American, that he actually was white, but he felt so much guilt over what the white man had done that he sort of took on. And that would explain why he talks funny, because he's like, he only has the idea of a caricature of a Comanche person. And therefore, he would also, I think, would make him more sympathetic. Like, it's something that he feels the need to atone with. He's just really bad at atoning. But his heart is in the right place. Whereas this is just like, I'm a kooky dude. And again, if the film is trying to make apologies for it, at the same time, it's like, no. All the other Comanches talk normally. Tonto is just traumatized. It's like, that doesn't make it better. Nothing makes it better.
He's
just a mentally challenged racist stereotype.
All around.
Oh my God. Can we talk about good movies? Can we do recommendations? Because I think I'm worn out ragging on the Lone Ranger.
Yes.
I can't believe we didn't even talk about the framing device, but that's
fine. Oh, we did. We talked about how crappy it was.
We just mentioned
how unnecessary and just, boy, can't the audience can't get enough of Tonto looking like a leather bag.
Sorry, that's very accurate. Oh, it was so distracting. He just looked like a stick. He looked like a walking Slim Jim, basically.
Oh, goodness. All right. Dave, what do you got for us in terms of recommendations?
So I've talked about it a couple times today, but I'm going to recommend James Mangold's 310 to Yuma. It's the remake of the 1957 film, and it was made in 2007. Fantastic cast here, and they actually do include all the tropes that we kind of glossed over them today. Lone Ranger does try to include the tropes of Western movies, so you've got shootouts, you've got basically like Indians attacking settlements and burning them, you've got Chinese laborers working on a railroad, all those kinds of things that you're used to seeing from Western movies. 310 to Yuma has them as well. It's just a good movie. That's the main difference you want to take away from this one. It's got a fantastic cast in it. I mean, it's got Christian Bale and Russell Crowe in the leads. It's got Logan Lerman in there too, who's kind of an up-and-coming actor. It's also got in a supporting cast Dallas Roberts, Ben Foster, Peter Fonda, and Alan Tudyk, who I'm always a fan of. The basic premise of this story revolves around an outlaw named Ben Wade, that's played by Russell Crowe, who needs to be transported by the Pinkertons, which are sort of this, the railroad hires these security agents. So they're not technically law enforcement types, but they're like a private security force. They need to transport this outlaw to a town where the 310 to Yuma, the train, is going to pick him up and take him to an institution, take him back to prison, basically. Now, there's a ranch hand played by Christian Bale, by the name of Dan Evans. Basically, he just needs to make up some money and pay back some debts that he's owed. That's the premise that they put forward. So he goes to help the Pinkerton men. He's hired along to help transport him through sort of like he knows the lay of the land. So he's going to help transport Wade to this town to pick up the train. Along the way, a lot of interesting things happen. Wade kind of double crosses some people and he escapes a number of times. There's sort of a little bit of a cat and mouse game between Evans and Wade. And that's sort of like this macho white hat versus black hat kind of thing. They go back and forth a number of times. The really interesting thing in this movie ends up when they get to the town where the train is supposed to pick him up. And it turns out that Wade's gang has been following them for some time. And they're trying to rescue Wade back for them. What they do is they hire all these sort of thugs that are in the town to outnumber the marshals that are protecting the outlaw and basically scare off all the people that are protecting the outlaw except for Evans and his kid. So now you've got one white hat with the outlaw against just a whole town's full of just black hats. And it's a very well done action sequence at the end of this movie that has a lot of tension, but it also has a lot of the story becomes something more than just doing this job for the money. It becomes about honor. It becomes about restoring sort of your sense of what it means to be a good, moral, upstanding human citizen in a lawless West. I mean, it really does kind of encapsulate everything that's great about Westerns and everything that I miss that I miss currently about Westerns and that everything that was missed in The Lone Ranger. So I would suggest checking out 310 to Yuma. Honestly, you can watch either film. They're both fantastic, but I think the one that was filmed in 2007 is a little more accessible, a little more contemporary, and a little more, it was made for sort of a modern palette, so I think you'll enjoy it, so check it out.
Okay, awesome. Adam, what are you about you?
I am recommending one of John Ford's many, many Westerns. This is one of his later works. It's a 1962 film called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and this is one of my favorite Westerns of all time. It stars Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne, and there's a lot of this movie in The Lone Ranger, and you can see that Gore Verbinski pulled quite a bit of it. It starts out with a framing device with the older Jimmy Stewart and his character's wife named Hallie, played by Vera Miles. And they are going back to Jimmy Stewart's the town that he kind of was in when he was younger called Shinbone to attend a funeral of a local rancher named Tom Donovan, who's played by John Wayne, and this local rancher is kind of a nobody, and Jimmy Stewart's character is now an older U.S. senator, and he's kind of in line to become vice president, and it's kind of a big deal when he comes back to town, and everyone's wondering why he's there for the funeral of this kind of nobody. And then the film flashes back to when he was younger, and Jimmy Stewart's character, his name is Rance Stoddard. His stagecoach is attacked by a gang of outlaws led by a gunfighter named Liberty Valance, played by Lee Marvin. And he holds up the stagecoach and kind of beats Jimmy Stewart's character almost senseless, and he's kind of left for dead. And he's rescued by John Wayne's character Tom Donovan and taken back into town. The town is Shinbone. And while he's kind of recuperating, he's working at this restaurant, and Liberty Valance comes in and kind of rustles up some more trouble, and it's kind of revealed that John Wayne's character is the only person in this town that is really standing up to him at all. And you know, he tells John Wayne's character that Jimmy Stewart's character better either get a gun or leave town. And so, you know, Jimmy Stewart's character is this very law-abiding man. He doesn't believe in guns, and he's very kind of by the book, which, I mean, that's a lot of that is what we saw at the beginning of The Lone Ranger. And it kind of leads into there's a lot of politics kind of in this movie, because Jimmy Stewart's character starts teaching at a school in the town and teaching kids and adults how to read and kind of what our country is made out of, and he leads them into it's never revealed what territory they're in here, but the territory is fighting for statehood, and so he's kind of leading the town in that. But they keep rushing up against Liberty Valance, and kind of events transpire, and the main takeaway of the movie is kind of about the power of legend. And there's a great line towards the end of the movie where a character says, "This is the West, sir. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend." And you know, there's some really great interplay between John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart, and the local newspaper publisher is played by Edmund O'Brien, and he's fantastic as kind of like the comedic relief, but also kind of the voice of reason in the town, talking about the power of the paper and you know, the power of freedom. And it's a really it's kind of a reflective work of John Ford's, because this was towards the later of his career, and he had made so many westerns before, so it kind of examines a lot of, you know, the legends and, you know, these heroes and how they come to be and what that does for them for the rest of their life. So I highly, highly recommend watching. It's on Netflix Instant Watch now. It's The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, so check it out.
Okay. Both great choices. My recommendation is No Name on the Bullet. The film stars Audie Murphy as a hired gunman named John Gant. He is infamous because he has killed a lot of men and never been arrested, and the reason that he's never been arrested is because he has a trick, and the trick is he provokes people. He provokes his target into attacking him, so his murders are always qualified as self-defense. So he comes to this town, and he just sort of sits there, and he's there, and everyone knows he's there to kill someone, but they don't know who, and he's not telling. And, of course, because he always draws his target out, he has the patience to just wait. And what this does is this stirs up this paranoia among all the townspeople. You know, what did you do? What did you do? You know, and everyone just starts reflecting on their sins and wondering, has death come for me? Because for all intents and purposes in this film, Gant is death. He can't be killed. He can't be stopped, and he is almost a form of retribution, not a chaotic death, I suppose, but it's very sinister. And there is a story there about, you know, there's this doctor who believes in justice, and he has a fiance whose father is a judge, and everything sort of swirls around Gant, and it's a good film. It's a good mystery. But the thing about it is, not only is it really intense and minor in terms of its scale, not minor, but just sort of small and intimate. But one of the things that just blows me away about the film is Audie Murphy. And his performance is so good. It's just very enigmatic, and you can't really read him, but you know that he's just sort of in control of this whole situation. Audie Murphy was not a career actor. Audie Murphy rose to prominence by being one of the most decorated soldiers in World War II. And he got his way to Hollywood because of a Life magazine story on him, and he sort of came to the attention of James Cagney, and sort of that was sort of his entrance. So it wasn't just a matter of, oh, this regular guy is just coasting on his heroism from a completely unrelated profession. Audie Murphy was really good, and he spent most of his, or a large majority of his acting roles were in Westerns, but this one is just, it's an amazing performance. it's a film that I don't think a lot of people know, so I would highly encourage you to check out No Name on the Bullet. So thank you all for listening, and I don't know what we're going to talk about next week, but I want to talk about Pacific Rim because I'm just so excited about it, and it's just...
Robots.
We're just going to talk about robots and monsters, but...
Dude, I'm down with that. Yes, I have no problems with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So thank you all for listening. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
Adam Chitwood.
And Dave?
@DrClaw, MD.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.